Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 1178 of the Juice Box Podcast. Okay, so Scott is 55 years old. Not me, Scott. Scott, who you're going to listen to today on this episode with me. So two old Scotts. That's why we call it that. He's 55 years old. He has type 1 diabetes, celiac, asthma, Raynaud's, Gilbert's, vitiligo. He's a marathon runner. Today, we're going to talk to Scott about his life and some things that he's worried about, not the least of which is how newly diagnosed people are underinformed. Nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan. T1DExchange.org/juicebox. Take the survey. Help type 1 diabetes research to leap forward. You need to be a U.S. citizen, have type 1 diabetes, or be the caregiver of someone with type 1. The survey should take about 10 minutes to complete. You can do it from your phone or your tablet. You could probably do it while you're sitting on the toilet because it doesn't really take that long. T1DExchange.org/juicebox. But don't sit too long. You'll get hemorrhoids. US Med is sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box Podcast, and we've been getting our diabetes supplies from US Med for years. You can as well. usmed.com/juicebox or call 888-721-1514. Use the link or the number, get your free benefits check, and get started today with US Med. This show is sponsored today by the glucagon that my daughter carries, Gvoke HypoPen. Find out more at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by AG1. Drinkag1.com/juicebox. When you use my link and place your first order, you're going to get a welcome kit, a year's supply of vitamin D, and 5 free travel packs.
Hi, my name is Scott. I live somewhere in the Midwest near the mountains. I have type 1 diabetes. I was diagnosed in June of 2020. My doctor actually called me while I was mountain biking to tell me that I probably should eat less carbs for a few days till they figured out what was going on. No family history whatsoever of it. And I have 5 other autoimmune disorders.
Wow. Which one came first?
I was diagnosed in my teens with Gilbert's, which is, you know, it's benign, but my father actually had it. That's why I was tested for it. And then I have slight hints of arthritis, but I don't take anything for it. That was diagnosed when I was in my 20s. And then I got Giardia from drinking contaminated water in the woods one time. And my doctor gave me blood tests for all this. The medicine you have to take for it, my liver function was really weird. So I spent months in and out of tests before they finally decided I had celiac.
Okay.
And
how old are you then?
Geez, 2009. I was in my 30s.
Okay.
Like 32. I've had asthma my entire life, which could be considered autoimmune to some extent because that's, you know, it's just inflammation.
Yeah.
And then I was diagnosed in 2020 with type 1.
How did you
have DKA? No, nothing.
Okay, hold on. So I actually think this doesn't happen very frequently. I should have a sound effect, but I don't know anyone's ever said Gilbert's before to me. So common harmless liver condition in which the liver doesn't properly process bilirubin.
Yep.
Do you do anything for it?
No. The only effect it has on my life is I can't donate blood.
Oh, well, listen, that's not bad.
Yeah, exactly.
I need a couple of things to get me out of responsibilities. That'd be all right. Wow. Okay, but how the hell did you avoid type 1 for so long? You're like a cop. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's so funny. So my wife's a nurse. She has like all these letters after her name, mm-hmm. On her badge and stuff. So she's done some crazy stuff. And when I was diagnosed, she was actually at work, and I texted her my labs, and she goes, type 2, and I'm like, I have no idea. I mean, all I had was the lab. All I had was my glucose was like 600.
Yeah. What's your body style like, Scott? I mean,
I'm a distance runner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is that why when she was like type two doesn't make sense to her, she thought?
Yeah. Nor did it to my, so my PA is actually also a runner, and I've run with her like around town, which is hysterical. We didn't know each other till, so we moved here. We moved to where we live now, and I had never established a doctor here, like a permanent doctor. I had gone to a group of doctors for, you know, just yearly checkups, but did not have a specific physician. So I had made an appointment with this person just for, you know, I had these weird symptoms. I felt like my mouth was on fire, like all the time. I couldn't eat anything with hot peppers in it. And I love hot peppers. I absolutely adore spicy food, and I couldn't eat anything. And that's why I went to the doctor.
Did you ever figure out what that was?
Yeah, it's as soon as my blood sugar got back to normal, I was back to guzzling sriracha like it's water.
Oh my goodness. That's interesting. Again, Scott, you're like a you feel like a virgin to me here. Yeah, no. I mean, you're just saying so many things I've never heard before. I'm delighted, which I'm sorry that your medical maladies are delighting to me. But I mean, I've had a lot of conversations. I don't hear a lot of people say stuff that's different sometimes, you know, in this part of the conversation. So that's interesting. So you couldn't handle spicy food while your blood sugars were high?
Yeah. Huh. And like last night, I had rice. We had Thai food last night, and I went way overboard. And, you know, when you go way overboard, obviously your pump fails or your pump site fails. So I was like 250, and like I could literally feel my mouth burning. And I'm like, this isn't fair.
Boy, yeah, that's quite the deterrent, actually, isn't it? I can't let my blood sugar get higher. My mouth will go on fire. Boy, that's it, man. That's what else you got going on that people don't know about? Like, is there any other weird stuff happening?
No, I think that's about it. Oh, and I have, I'm going to say it wrong. I always do. And my doctor laughs at me. Vitiligo?
Oh, it's vitiligo. I don't know which one. Yeah, it's vitiligo. I spent the last week of my life with my wife mocking me pretty openly because I'm enjoying the television show Mayor of Kingstown. And I've been saying it a lot in the house. I'm like a child. And she says, you're saying the word incorrectly. And I was like, is it not Kingstown? And she says, no, the other word. So I said of, because I was screwing around by then. And she goes, no, mayor, you're saying mayor wrong. You're saying like M-A-R-E. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, mayor. And she goes, nope, wrong. And I'm like, mayor? And she's like, nope. And now it's an Abbott and Costello routine. Like, I'm like, mayor? And she goes, that's weird. And I was, and so anyway, this goes back and forth. Then she gets frustrated with me. And then I think it's not even just frustrating. I think she looks at me and thinks, I probably shouldn't have made another human being with him. I feel like that's where it is. Anyway, this went on for days because I, like a chaser, I don't know if you know any Yiddish, but I blew my way through two seasons of that show because I was enjoying it so much. So I've been talking about it for like 2 weeks. And anyway, I don't know how to say the word. So don't feel bad about vitiligo, which I only know because Michael Jackson had it. If you take insulin or sulfonylureas, you are at risk for your blood sugar going too low. You need a safety net when it matters most. Be ready with Gvoke HypoPen. My daughter carries Gvoke HypoPen everywhere she goes because it's a ready-to-use rescue pen for treating very low blood sugar in people with diabetes ages 2 and above that I trust. Low blood sugar emergencies can happen unexpectedly, and they demand quick action. Luckily, Gvoke HypoPen can be administered in two simple steps, even by yourself in certain situations. Show those around you where you store Gvoke HypoPen and how to use it. They need to know how to use Gvoke HypoPen before an emergency situation happens. Learn more about why Gvoke HypoPen is in Arden's Diabetes Toolkit at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. Gvoke shouldn't be used if you have a tumor in the gland on the top of your kidneys called a pheochromocytoma, or if you have a tumor in your pancreas called an insulinoma. Visit gvokeglucagon.com/risk for safety information. It's very important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for the past number of years, I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is researched and developed by an in-house team of scientists, doctors, and nutritionists with decades of experience in their respective fields. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by making it so that there aren't a million different pills and capsules for me to keep track of. Just one scoop of AG1 mixed in water every day, and I'm on my way. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support, as well as vitamin C and zinc to support my immune health. I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high-quality product that I genuinely look forward to drinking every day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at my link, drinkag1.com/juicebox. That's drinkag1.com/juicebox. Check it out.
I was in a research trial for a COVID vaccine, and I got to be really good friends with some of the PIs that work for the research hospital. And they had me at the top of the list, they said, which means I might have a chance for a study they're doing with some new topical and light therapy and all that. So I'm hoping to get into that.
Wait a minute. So that's for the vitiligo. Where do you have it on your body?
My hands, my face, really all over. So like I have scars on my legs because I fall a lot. And every time I get a cut on my leg, it leaves like a white line that never repigments. Mm-hmm. That part doesn't, I mean, it doesn't bother me. I told my wife all the time that it would be nice not to look like a tattooed freak for a little bit. And she laughed because it's not that bad. Nobody notices, but you know, everybody notices.
Well, are you incredibly Caucasian?
I can get a tan with a flashlight. So,
oh, okay.
And I live in the high desert, so I'm in the sun a lot.
You're in the sun a lot. So is it, it's interesting. Like, so your skin tone is, I don't know how to do this. Are you like Italian, like that kind of skin tone?
No, I'm mostly German and Eastern European. So
okay,
if you put me in a cave for a year, I'd be pasty white.
Yeah, I'd probably be able to see through you. I got you. There's European in my kids from my wife, and more Italian from me. And they tan well, but they go to translucent in the wintertime. It's pretty interesting. It really is oddly interesting how like pasty they get without the sun. That's your whole life, the vitiligo, or no?
Yep.
That's been
like, yeah, since I was like 19, and it's kind of funny. I was a bartender. I had hair halfway down to my butt. My mother hated it. My mother thought that I looked like a hippie. And I guess I was 21. I was driving home to see my mom, and I just literally stopped at a haircut place like halfway in the middle of Pennsylvania and got it all cut off. And when the lady cut it off, she goes, "You have gray hairs." And I'm like, "I do not. I'm 21 or 22 or whatever I was." And she's like, "No, but she pulls one out." And that's when it started. That's when I noticed that I started losing pigmentation. And within a year, I had, you know, I was partially gray. And within like 5 years, I was completely and totally gray and had patches all over. And every doctor I went to went, "Yep, that's what it is."
It's always encouraging when they do that. We were at a, where were we? We were at a doctor Arden was getting, she had a lot of shoulder pain. She got a steroid injection in her shoulder, right? She had like some inflammation, I guess. And it was fascinating how quickly, like he put the injection and it went away immediately. It was crazy. But not the point. Like while we were there, she's like, you know, I'm pretty bendy. Like Arden's not like super flexible, but she's got like flex to her. And he's like, that's probably that Ehlers-Danlos. And we were like, yeah, we've considered that could be that. We don't know. She doesn't have a diagnosis or anything like that. Blah, blah, blah. And he goes, yeah, there's nothing they can do about that. He just said it like, you don't want to let that one go. Because he's like, you can exercise and stuff. And then he just sort of stopped talking. I was like, what a lovely bedside manner you have, sir. Okay, so your autoimmune stack up as you get older. Now, your mom and dad don't have any autoimmune stuff, or they don't have diabetes?
My dad had Gilbert's, and that is the only thing we know about as far back. Now, I did have an uncle who, this would have been like in the 50s or 60s, mm-hmm. probably had celiac, because I always remember Bill never drank beer. That was the whole family knew this, like never offer Bill a beer because he'll get sick.
Oh, no kidding. And that was that.
Yeah. Hmm. And I always remember him, when we'd go to their house, like he would eat steak and potatoes. And that was literally the only two things he would eat was red meat and potatoes.
How long did he live?
Not long, like 60.
Okay, the way you giggled, Scott, was almost like devious. No, we got him. Don't worry. No. I mean, yeah, because I mean, there's a couple of other nutrients you need.
Yeah. You kind of want to balance that out. Maybe have a salad once a week.
Throw in a vitamin even.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. Your dad with the Gilberts and nothing else. And maybe an uncle with celiac. Boy, it just all jumped on you. Now, do you have kids?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do they have anything?
I have a 22-year-old, a 25-year-old, and a 28-year-old. And we made them all do TrialNet. We had them all tested for celiac when I was diagnosed. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Wow. And I'm good with that.
Jeez, did you grow up under a power line or something like that?
No, by train track. Does that count?
I don't know if it does or not. I just remember those stories about people whose homes were near power lines, then they turn into Spider-Man or something like that.
Yeah.
Which of these things has the biggest impact on your life?
Probably the celiac, because I live in a place where like even the breweries have tons of gluten-free selections. It's amazing how much like gluten-free beer I can have, but like I can't stand gluten-free pizza. I don't like the texture and the taste. And so it makes it hard to, I work in sales. I should note that. So I go out with customers and take them to dinner and stuff. And so the celiac really impacts that, because I don't want to like, oh yeah, I have to eat gluten-free, let's go pick this place, or I'm diabetic, let's go pick, you know, some place that's low carb or something like that. So the celiac makes it hard to sometimes to
you're a bummer. I was gonna say, you're a bummer in the car, like, let's get pizza. You're like, no. Wait, you want Chinese? I don't want my blood sugar to be high all night. No, what about
I've had these conversations.
Yeah, I'm sure. What's it like in a because that's a real business setting that's even beyond business, because it's not like the people sitting around you in a cubicle or the people you work with every day. Like, when you have to sit down at a meal and give yourself insulin, does that come with a description every time when you meet a new person?
Yeah. So I'm running Loop, and I work in a very, very high tech field. So I work with a lot of people who are programmers and software guys and AI and all that. And I always show off Loop and the pump and the CGM and talk about, you know, the fact that we're running unapproved code and all that. So it's a great icebreaker with some people. Like, I've had people who have literally built Loop for the one guy built it for his nephew.
After seeing it with you.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Oh, all right. That's so cool. So, I mean, you're an older, I mean, you're in your 50s. I was just thinking about this morning, the lessons that come with being older, about like patience. I was thinking a lot about patience this morning and how, like, when I was young, patience felt like apathy, but that doesn't feel that way anymore. And, you know, I'm assuming you've learned along the way that none of this matters. So, you know, it's just tell people, who cares if they don't like it, what are you going to do? I wouldn't imagine it's ever gotten in the way of business, right? Like, nobody's ever like curled up and been like, oh, like that, right?
At my last job, I had a meeting on Tuesday at 11 a.m. every other Tuesday. And I would have to prep for that meeting, because it was my biggest customer. And like, I would hear from my management on a routine basis, if this customer leaves, so do you. And they were unhappy. And I was getting, they are the reason I left my old job, because I was under all this pressure and I was getting no support. And I just, life's too short to hate your job. And I hated it. So I left. And then, but every Tuesday I would have to prep for this meeting. I would have to take a unit of insulin like 15 minutes before the meeting, because I would spike, and I would go from, you know, a flat line of 90 with no carbs whatsoever to 180 in 20 minutes in this meeting, just the stress of it.
Yeah.
That is the only thing that I could possibly come up with that diabetes impacted my work.
Okay. I used to hate ordering my daughter's diabetes supplies. I never had a good experience and it was frustrating. But it hasn't been that way for a while, actually for about 3 years now, because that's how long we've been using US Med. USmed.com/juicebox or call 888-721-1514. US Med is the number one distributor for Freestyle Libre systems nationwide. They are the number one specialty distributor for Omnipod Dash, the number one fastest growing tandem distributor nationwide, the number one rated distributor in Dexcom customer satisfaction surveys. They have served over 1 million people with diabetes since 1996, and they always provide 90 days worth of supplies and fast and free shipping. US Med carries everything from insulin pumps and diabetes testing supplies to the latest CGMs like the Libre 3 and Dexcom G7. They accept Medicare nationwide and over 800 private insurers. Find out why US Med has an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau at usmed.com/juicebox or just call them at 888-721-1514. Get started right now and you'll be getting your supplies the same way we do. Yeah, you don't want to be beeping while these people are already like pissed about something that's nothing you can really do about it. Cause you're just in there. Like you're a mediator, right? In that scenario, like they're mad about something that's not you're doing. It's the business. And now you have to go in there and explain to them why they shouldn't be mad.
Yeah. I was the designated apologizer.
Is that on your CV?
Yeah, it sure was.
Is your business making people upset? Scott can handle it. Start tap dance and singing a song at the same time, right? Is what it feels like. No, I almost know what you mean. I didn't before I had this job, but now I'm in a weird position where the value of the podcast to advertisers is something that some of them just intrinsically understand and some of them don't get at all. Like it works, but they don't know why and they want it to be trackable. And you're busy explaining to them, that's not really how this works. Like, I know you want it to work that way. You want it to be person A clicked on this thing. They bought that thing. It came through my link. You can attribute that to me. I have value. And that's literally, you know, that's the business side of my life. Except that there are plenty of things that people go into doctor's offices and they're like, hey, give me one of these. Or the doctor's like, do you need a blank? And they go, yeah, I'll take blank because... They might not even think it's because they heard it on the podcast, but it is. And that's not trackable for me.
Yeah.
Some of them really get it. Actually, a lot of them get it. And a few of them don't. And having meetings with those people, that's what it feels like. It feels like I'm tap dancing on the head of a pin, singing a song and juggling at the same time and trying to get them to see something that they don't understand. And it's a ton of pressure because... it's a diabetes podcast. Like there's not a never ending list of people who are super interested in advertising. Do you know what I mean? Like I hate the pressure. Honestly, I wish I could just make the podcast and not think about that. Or they would just agree that I'm fantastic and just send the ad revenue and I'll do the ads for them. You know what I mean? So that'd be nice, but I take your point. I would, it's nice that you were in a situation to get away from that. I don't want to make it sound like I'm like burdened or anything like that. I make a podcast, Scott. You know what I mean? Like after I do this with you, I'm going to have lunch with a friend and then I'm going to get my haircut later today. So I'm not like, it's not the worst thing in the world. Anyway, I'm going to get to your diabetes in a second, but I'm interested in you having to go to basically your adult children and telling them they have to get a medical procedure. So was that met easily with them? Were any of them like, I don't want to do this, and you had to talk them into it?
So I have two mini me's. The one is the anxiety-ridden bundle of nerves me, and the other one is the sarcastic and rude me. Mm-hmm. And the bundle of nerves is the boy, and the sarcastic one is the girl. And the boy said, I'll do it, but I don't like needles. And the girl said, I swear to God, if I get diabetes because of you, you're going to the what was it? Oh, she said, you're going to the county nursing home, not the paid one.
There you go. Even the anxiety, Scott, I think might be a little like, I'm not going to tell you anxiety is autoimmune because that would be silly and I'm not a researcher. But I do think that after having so many conversations, I don't even know how to put it, but I think there are things that run in that river. You know, like how many people have I spoken to who are like, oh, I have a bipolar uncle. I'm like, how many people with type 1 have to say that to you before you go, boy, that seems like more than a coincidence. You know, or the even just allergies. I had terrible allergies when I was younger, like really bad. And they've gotten better over time. But my son got blasted with them when he was like a senior in high school. And they've gotten better over time. But he's always like a little sniffy when you see him or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I am this time of year. Just the dust here is crazy. And when the wildfires are really bad. Now, we escaped. So the central part of the U.S. escaped most of the Canadian wildfire smoke this summer. Like, it all was back east. Mm-hmm. And that's really weird. But when we get the Utah fires and stuff, it's absolutely terrible here. I ran a half marathon in air quality that was kind of sketchy. Like, afterward, looking at the news, we probably shouldn't have been running. But I spent like a week using an inhaler because of it.
Really, just from running outdoors and that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a bad day. Like, it's funny. The picture shows up in my Facebook memories all the time. And it's like, you can't even see the sun. It's just like this blur in the sky.
There were days here where it was dark during the day.
Yeah.
And yellow. Like, the sun couldn't get through at all. And the sky was dystopian. Like, no kidding. Like, I'm not over exaggerating. And sometimes you couldn't see down the street. And that was from Canada, and I'm in New Jersey. And it was not a thing that happens around here. So it was really off-putting, hard to breathe. You go outside, you couldn't get a deep breath. Like, you know, you'd cough. It was really something else, actually.
I have to wait for you to release some of the Canadian people that you interviewed this summer to see if you're blaming them for the
wildfire. Oh, I blame them all heartily. And I know Canadians that I would text personally and tell them that I don't know what you're doing up there, but please pull it together. I said, if this was America, we'd have this handled by now. I don't know if we would have or not, by the way. I just, you know, like, come on. And so you're saying that your level of, I don't know, like, tolerance for that changes by the, like, in the year, or is it more about the dust in the air?
It's more about the dust in the air. It doesn't help that I have two very furry dogs and a cat, and... You know, any normal person with bad allergies would probably start by not getting a couple of dogs and then, you know, letting them sleep on the bed with you.
Yeah, no, that's a bad decision. I'll tell you right now, my son loves our dogs. If he ever gets one as an adult, I'll be stunned. There's one of our dogs, if he touches it, he can't even touch the dog. And, you know, and my wife has gone through bouts of that through the years, where she could wrestle with the dog, there was no trouble, down to I can't touch it, back to it's better again. And it's actually difficult as a parent and as a husband, because there's part of me that's like, I should take this dog for a walk and not let it come back, because it's like, this is a really terrible for my family. And there's part of me that's just like, I don't, maybe dogs just don't belong in a house, you know, because it's more than they can handle. For sure. You know, I get like, sometimes I'm like, is it bad for everybody? I don't know. I don't think I'm going to turn people off on having a pet, but I take your point. I don't know why the hell you would do that. So
I was like, I do like my dogs though.
Well, hey, listen, I like them too. You also like pizza, but you stopped eating it.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Put pizza and the dogs in the same box and put them in the garage.
Yeah.
But pizza is good. It's terrible. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry for you.
You were talking about what affects me the most earlier. You talk about your pizza recipe. I would love to do that. I love to cook. I'm actually fairly competent at it too. I would love to cook pizza like you made, but you just can't make gluten-free pizza like that. It doesn't work.
You need the gluten. Actually, it's what you need. It's all about, when you learn to make the dough, there's nothing to dough, by the way. It's like flour and salt and water, some yeast. But when you really go dig down deep and learn about what makes a good pizza dough, it's all about that building of those gluten molecules in there. And that's what makes it fluffy and crispy and airy and everything you're looking for. So yeah, it sucks, man. I'm sorry. There's so much gluten. Like you told the story about your whatever uncle or whatever, the beer guy that couldn't drink beer. And obviously that's a really long time ago, probably before. It sounds like he was before factory farming.
Yeah.
Right. But now there's so many people are affected by it. It really does make you wonder, like, what's on the wheat? Like, is it something they're spraying on the wheat that's like causing it more? Like, I don't know, obviously, but the instance has gone up so much over the last few decades. It's just seems crazy to me, honestly.
It's amusing to me that my wife and kids love to poke fun at me. Like, we'll go to a restaurant and be like, hey, this bread is good. You want some? Or, you know, they do this to me all the time. And we all laugh and joke about it. My wife went to the doctor yesterday for some stomach issues she's been having. And the doctor told her he wants her to go gluten-free for a month. And she came home almost in tears. And I'm like, I feel bad for you, but not that bad.
Is she upset because of the gluten or because of the crap she thought was going to take from you?
Well, no, because of the gluten. Oh, so she never met a carb she didn't like. Mm. She and the dogs have breakfast cookies every morning, which sounds terrible, but they have these, the Biscoffs. You know what I mean?
You ought to tell her to go on Wegovy because she just wouldn't care about food at all. And then that would fix that. Because we had, we made something for dinner the other night and it just went poorly. It's a long story. I'm not going to bother you with it, but I bought the wrong meat. I usually get it at one place. I got it at another place, went to eat it. And we were immediately, both of us were like, this is terrible. Now we've been cooking all day and we just like swallowed hard and threw it in the garbage. And I was like, I'll go get a pizza. It was just a knee-jerk reaction from like my life before being on weight loss medication. And then we got the pizza and both of us took a couple of bites and we're like, oh, we don't want this. This is terrible. Like so heavy and greasy and like nobody, like we're like, ugh. It's very interesting how that those GLP medications just tell your brain, like, I don't want this. Like, I'm not telling your wife to do that for that reason, but I'm telling you, if she was using that, she wouldn't give a crap about those breakfast things. She wouldn't care at all. It's fascinating. I was explaining it to my dentist yesterday. He's like, well, how's this working? And I said, well, I think I might have a GLP deficiency because as soon as I started taking it, I started losing weight well before even like caloric restriction could have helped me. But I just said, I'm like, my brain never tells me I'm hungry and my stomach never tells me I'm hungry. And so and even when I'm incredibly hungry, it just feels like, oh, it would be nice if I had a meal. Like that's the extent of the pressure I get from it. I think they're going to do more testing and I think you're going to see type ones get GLP medications in the future.
Yeah.
I'm talking to a couple of people. Eventually I'll have some of them on the podcast who are experiencing a significant decrease in the amount of insulin they need. And their A1Cs are going down, their blood sugars are more stable, and they're using a GLP medication for weight, but it's actually working so well in other places. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. I have a question about Raynaud's. How does that present for you?
Mostly after exercise, like if it's below about 60 degrees, my hands will get like completely numb. And there have been times that I literally had to go soak them in water because it gets painful. And, you know, with the vitiligo, my hands were already mostly white, but they turn like a corpse white, like printing paper white. I've had people stop me and ask me if I was okay because I looked, my hands were so white.
Like a stranger?
I ran I think it was a half marathon. And at the end, I was just like bent over catching my breath. And the medical staff came over and they looked at me and they're like, are you okay? And I'm like, why? Why are you asking? And they started pointing my hands and they're like, your hands are really, really white. I'm like, oh, it's just Raynaud's.
Don't worry. I have a lot of autoimmune issues. I like that you said corpse white. That's not a color you're going to find on a wall paint ever, I don't think. But it does paint a picture, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So numb or cold?
Both. So it'll get painfully cold and then it'll get numb and then it'll get painfully cold again and then it'll get numb.
And there's no way to warm your hands, right?
No, it goes away. You know, after 15, 20 minutes, I draw my hands in my pockets or put gloves on and it goes away.
As you're sitting here talking about it, I'm squeezing my hand. I'm like, why am I squeezing my hand while I'm doing this? A couple of weeks ago, I went to Touch by Type 1 in Orlando and I spoke at their event. Beautiful event, really terrific. It was all day Saturday. I flew home early Sunday morning to be with I was like, oh, I don't want to miss the whole weekend with my wife. So I'm going to take an early flight to get home. That was a mistake. Here's why it was a mistake. 6 a.m. flight, had to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning in the hotel. Didn't go to bed till 10 o'clock at night the night before. Got up, was exhausted, like, you know, middle of the night, Ubered to the airport, get there. And then my flight gets pushed back an hour and a half, which is just has nothing to do with the story, but is incredibly frustrating because you start thinking I could have slept till 4 o'clock. And anyway, we finally get on the flight. It's this, as you might expect on a Sunday morning, a very sparsely, you know, distributed flight. There's people in seats here and there. And before we take off, stewardess comes up and she just makes the announcement. Listen, there's enough people on this flight. You guys can all have your own row. Just feel free to get up and move. So I go to another row. I'm on a very low budget airline because it goes to an airport very close to my house. And so I'm like, all right, I know that the seats are basically concrete with a piece of paper over top of them, but like, whatever, I'm going to land 15 minutes from my house. So, you know, this is the thing I want. So I go into the row and I'm like, I'm exhausted. I'm going to lay down. And I lay across the three seats. I just curl up on my right side like a baby and I go to sleep. In my Cozy Earth joggers, by the way, in case people are wondering, CozyEarth.com, use the offer code JUICEBOX to save 40%. And I'm laying across the thing. I hope they're still advertisers 6 months from now when this comes out. I pass out, Scott. Like, I'm gone. And I'm awoken by my right hand asleep. Like, that's what wakes me up, like how painfully my right hand is asleep. And I'm so tired, I just flip over and I go back to sleep. I sleep for another like 90 minutes. And when I wake up, my right hand is still asleep. And I was like, that's weird. But I had no idea about time. Like, I'd been so like sound asleep, I didn't know. Anyway, I'm getting my bag. I'm getting off the plane. I'm shaking my hand. Yeah, in the parking lot, I'm shaking my hand. I get in my car. I'm like, what is happening? And it is now 3 weeks later, and I still have numbness in my right hand. I think I slept on the metal rail right on my elbow where that nerve passes through your elbow, like near, like where I guess people would call it like your funny bone. And I think I damaged the nerve in my arm. I think I was that passed out on this hard thing. So it's getting better very, very slowly. And the internet, please don't laugh at me if you're listening. The internet tells me this could take months to go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not like going to a doctor because I have like full like strength and range of motion and all that stuff. And it does seem to get better as time passes, but incredibly slowly. So, and my point of telling you that is that every day I'm bothered by it. And I can't imagine what would happen if I went for a run and my hands were freezing cold. I would find that upsetting, but I guess you're used to it.
It's weird though. I don't seem to have the problem skiing or like hiking, or it's just it seems to be just after some sort of strenuous activity.
Yeah. I'm going to definitely end up with a problem as I get older because I have a lawnmower that I sit on and my arms are out in front of me. And if I do that in the cold, my fingers go numb. And they actually, a doctor told me, they think it's where the nerve passes through my shoulder that gets pinched. And I was like, well, can they do anything about that? And he's like, oh, there's an incredibly difficult surgery you could try. And I was like, never mind. Yep. I guess maybe I'll just get a different lawnmower or, you know, whatever. But yeah, you love it when they're like, oh, it's a surgery. It's really hard. I'm like, oh, thanks. But anyway, this thing with my elbow and my hand is, it's hard not to be concerned every day. Like, you know, just when water hits it and it feels weird, like it feels like my half of my arm and half of my hand, like the skin on top is like half asleep. I don't know another way to put it.
Have you seen a doctor about this?
I looked on the internet, Scott, and the internet said to me.
Well, that's good. Yeah, that's the same thing.
I also called my shoulder surgeon because I thought that maybe it was emanating from my shoulder. He, of course, was like, "That's not your shoulder, it's your neck." I'm like, dude, it's definitely not my neck. It might be my elbow. And he said, well, listen, if it persists, and I was like, right. He said, go see a doctor. And I was like, what kind of doctor? And he said, two different kinds. You can either see a psychiatrist or a neurosurgeon, a neurologist. And I was like, all right, neurologist, I understand loosely. I'm like, a psychiatrist? He said, they have access to drugs that actually impact nerve pain. So apparently there's something that psychiatrists prescribe for something else that also helps nerve pain. And I was like, all right, man, I'm going to believe you, but I'm also going to go with, I think it's going to go away. So as long as it continues to get better, I'm not going to think anything of it. I'm just going to let it go. I think I've given myself 2 months and then I'm going to go to a doctor. You think that's too long? It doesn't get worse. Like, I can sit and work all day at my desk. It doesn't change. So I don't know. I probably should go sooner. Is that what you're telling me?
It's amusing because we were talking about my discovering I had diabetes story about how I had the burning mouth thing, but for like 4 or 5 weeks I had been drinking. It was June and it's hot here, and we had been hiking all over, just tons of hiking. And the one hike, I took a 2 liter backpack of water, or 2 liter like a Camelback style backpack with 2 liters of water, and drank it all, and then tried to get my wife to give me hers before that. But I did the same thing. I'm like, I have this thing I'm concerned about, but I'm gonna set a time frame. It's gonna be like, if it's not better in 2 weeks, then I'll go to the doctor.
Well, the internet said that this nerve thing could last up to 6 months. Jeez. I won't let it go that long, but you know, I mean, also, where am I getting a neurologist from? And you know, I'm gonna go to a neurologist and tell him my hand's asleep, and I know he's gonna be like, oh, that'll go away. And I'm just gonna be so angry. But I also think about, I shouldn't say this on the podcast, not like big stuff, like not like your blood sugar being 300 every day or something like that. But these little things, I also do like a cost benefit analysis in my head about how long I think I'm going to live. I'm like, can I just deal with this until it's over? It's how it feels to me sometimes. I mean, and medicine thinks about things that way too. Like if you need a hip or a knee, they're going to tell you wait as long as you can. But we can't wait too long till you get too old, but we need to wait long enough that you'll never need it again, because the next time this hip goes out, you'll be too old for the surgery. Like, so that is, I mean, partly our bodies are what they are, and they're not just imminently fixable all the time. This is some bullshit. I'm not going to lie to you, man. It feels really weird. Like just sitting here with half my hand tingling, and not tingling enough that you're like, stop, just enough that the world feels different. And anybody who's had their hand go to sleep knows what I'm talking about. But anyway.
I busted my thumb up on a snowboarding on some feature. And I went to the doctor after 3 weeks of agony. And the doc said, well, we can cut it open and fix all the stuff inside of it, or you could take Motrin for another 2-3 weeks and just live with it. And so my left thumb doesn't look like my right thumb, because I was not having my hand in a cast for 6 months because my thumb felt weird.
You know, we're going to have to call this episode Two Old Scots, because I just had toe surgery. And I'll gloss over it because I think I've mentioned it on here. But I just woke up one morning, I'm embarrassed, over a year ago, and maybe longer than that now. And my toe hurt a lot. And I know in my mind, I was like, Kelly's like, did you stub it? Did you? I'm like, I have no recollection of anything happening to my toe. I went to bed, it was fine. I woke up, it felt like somebody was stabbing my toe. And I'm like, this will go away. Then it didn't. Then it got worse. And then there'd be good days and bad days. And I was like, maybe there's a bone chip in there. And like someday, like, you know, I'm like telling myself all kinds of stories. Then I get into the position where I have to fly unexpectedly to go say goodbye to my mother. And as me and my youngest brother, Rob, are like trying to get through like the Chicago airport, he's like, dude, do you need a walker or something? And I couldn't walk. I was like walking on my heel, like running through the airport on my heel. I was like, oh crap, I'll go to the doctor. So I went to urgent care because I was like, just do an x-ray and it'll probably show like a bone chip or something. And then I can take it to a real doctor and get it taken care of. Like, that's what I thought. And so sure enough, she x-rays it. She goes, oh, it looks like a little bone chipped off here. I was like, and then I felt like a genius. I was like, I knew this is what happened. And she goes, looks like it's settled in the knuckle here, blah, blah, blah. I took the film to a doctor. He goes, oh, yeah, it looks like you have some arthritis in this knuckle. We'll clean that out. It'll be fine. I was like, great. I woke up from the surgery. He goes, oh, it wasn't arthritis. I was like, wait, what? He goes, yeah, like so there's a lot of fraying in there. And I'm like, of what? And he goes, the ligament, not the ligament, the other thing, crap, fibrous, something, doesn't matter. Something was all frayed away. He goes, anyway, I had to give you microfracture surgery. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, we poked like countless holes in the bone, a cartilage. He's like, so that hopefully the cartilage will grow into the holes and kind of reattach your toe. And I was like, seriously? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. Like, I thought he was cleaning out a knuckle and taking out like a bone chip. And I'm like, how does that happen? He goes, no, you probably heard it. at some point. I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, the cartilage was just fraying in my toe, and it was my big toe, and it wouldn't bend, and I couldn't drive off it. So I couldn't walk. And boy, I'll tell you, that writes your brain about what you're in control of. You know what I mean? Like, that little thing in there is broken. Like, I'm now hobbled, like legitimately hobbled, and in a significant amount of pain. I took a fistful of over-the-counter drugs to get through that flight. Anyway, it actually seems to be working. It's getting better all the time, and the pain's very minimal. So hopefully this works, because if not, Scott, they're going to fuse my toe. And I'm like, they're going to what? Now he's like, yeah, we just go to the knuckle. We fuse the bone together. I was like, that's the fix? Like, where the hell are we? Anyway, that's where medicine is for your toe.
Your toe.
For your toe.
That's wild.
Yeah. You don't use medication for your asthma symptoms, or just an inhaler? Is that prescribed, or is it over the counter?
It's albuterol. It's a script, and I haven't used it. I haven't used it at all this summer. Like I said, we had a very, very low smoky summer here, and I'm really happy with it.
You don't need it to run.
No, it's kind of funny. I ran a small race down by Colorado Springs this weekend. It was only 8/10 of a mile for 24 hours. And the dust was really bad down there. And I thought, oh, I didn't bring my inhaler. This is going to stink really badly. But I had no problems whatsoever, thank goodness.
Hold on 1 second. I am looking at, I'm getting a live, I'm moderating my Facebook group live. So somebody looks like they've jumped into the group and they're trying to scam people. And Isabel knows I'm recording, and she wants to make sure I want to do what she wants to do. Yeah. So
it's just one of those, I trust your judgment.
Yes. Yeah. Because she's going to have to ban the account. And she's like, I want to be sure before I do this. Okay. That's what we're going to do. I have a whole life that no one knows about. She just typed bye to me about the account, not to me. So I'll say thank you. Still recording. Yeah, it's a real world, like a whole job moderating that group. It's so big. Oh, yeah. You're in it. I know. Because I recognize your name from it. But there's this thing, like, the bigger the group gets, I think the more valuable it gets. It's amazing how well it works for people. There's no time of day in a 24-hour day you can't ask a question and not get responses, which is amazing. But once there's that many people and it's that active, then the members look like fish in a barrel to people who are either scamming or selling. And they'll very artfully try to make what they're doing seem legitimate or caring or whatever. And then they get you, then they DM with you, and then they take your money. So it's hard to...
I work in a space that does content moderation, not what you're doing, but on a similar vein. And I see it all the time in all of these groups where someone comes in and goes, look at the shirt I just bought, or look at this thing I just bought. And you look, you know, you click on their profile and they joined 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. Oh, there was I've said this before, but it's worth saying again, a coordinated effort to sell shoes. And it was fascinating how well it was coordinated. One account, by the way, it could all be the same person. Like, I would have, there's no way to know what you're dealing with. But one account says, I have diabetes and I'm having foot pain and I'm looking for a shoe. That's all it asks for. It needs help. And then real people come in and give help. Well, along the way, another account will come in and say, oh, my doctor gave me these and check them out because they really worked. And then they'll have a third account come in and say, I use those too. Then the first account says, I'm going to give these a try. And then they appear to be having a real conversation. And then before you know it, other people in the thread start buying the shoes too. By the time that all got broken down by one of my moderators who figured the whole thing out, Stephanie, she like sniffed the whole thing out like Columbo. I think we learned that there were like 6 accounts that were all on this one shoe scam, just to make everybody feel like it was a real conversation. It's good business too. Like, I mean, they're making money off of it. And it's,
I chose the wrong side of this. I sit and watch spammers all day long, constantly, 24/7. I think these people are idiots. I could get around me.
I could do a much better. Yeah. Well, that is the other problem, is that often where they're easy to catch is they don't have a grasp of the English language usually, which is what makes it easier to, like, you know, like I'm a pirate, like that kind of thing. And like it's easier. But when they can speak English well and use phrasing correctly and stuff like that, it's hard to find sometimes. I've often thought the world is lucky I'm a good person. I don't know if you've ever had this feeling. Because I could definitely rip people off if I needed to. Like I see how it could be done. Like that's what you're saying. Like I could get around this if I needed to. I don't have any like ill intentions for people, but if I did, I mean, my God, like you could do this all day long. Just little like scammy things all day long. You could do nothing but print money doing that. And that's what's happening. It's everywhere. So anyway, we keep it out, and it's a lot of work, and I hope people appreciate it, because there's times it's like 1 o'clock in the morning and I'm getting texts like, we have to do something about this. We can't leave this sit. Like I want to sleep, and you kind of can't. So anyway, all right, Scott, why did you want to come on the podcast? I mean, we've only been talking for 45 minutes, so now is probably the time to ask you.
Well, mostly you had reached out about people who are diagnosed as adults, and I find it fascinating watching basically the just found out crowd, where they come in and go, yeah, I was diagnosed. I've been in the hospital for a week. What do I do? It pains me to no end that these people are getting out of the hospital and asking what to do. Because I think I mentioned I was actually mountain biking when my doctor called to tell me I had diabetes.
Yeah.
So I wasn't in the hospital, but I came back. It took a little bit to find an endocrinologist, like a week. And I basically just ate salads for a week because I didn't know what else to do. And that's what my wife said to do. So I did that.
Yeah.
I got in with the endo. They gave me some information, but, and she's a great, don't get me wrong, I loved her. She was the best endocrinologist I have ever met. Then she moved and I got another one, and she's just as good. So I have this really great care team. I have an RD, and I see these people jump in the group like, what's a carb? How do I take insulin? Like these supremely basic questions seem to be not covered well by the medical staff. Mm-hmm. And that's what led me to that's actually how I found your podcast, was one of the other, you know, just the typical type one groups on Facebook were just driving me nuts with the sheer volume of dis and misinformation.
Yeah, it's tough. Jenny and I are prepping a series right now that's aimed at doctors. And so the idea behind it is, we're going to talk to doctors about what they should understand and what they should be telling people. And at the same time, we think the information will serve as education for the patients about what they should be expecting from their doctors. Right. So it should serve two groups. You should see like the massive amount of information we've pulled together from patients, from people listening to the podcast who are like, here's what my doctor doesn't know, or here's what I wish they understood. And we pulled that all together. And then we're going to kind of reverse engineer it and try to basically teach doctors how to take care of diabetes through a podcast. Cause I'm out of ideas about how to, like, I'm past hoping it's going to get better because it just isn't. Like the way the medical system is set up and the way they're taught in school, they just don't know, and they're never going to, and no one's going to change it. So I figured if this podcast helped people to live better with diabetes, maybe we could help doctors to understand it better. And I think it's big enough now that it's time to take a swing at that. So anyway, it's something we're going to be working on through the end of the year and the beginning of next year.
Is it going to be on the different podcast format, or is it going to be part of the Juice Box podcast?
Oh no, it'll be right here. But I also have toyed with the idea of launching it as a separate podcast too. But the problem there is that making anything popular is impossible. It is. And when something becomes popular, it's as much luck as it is anything else. So I've got the ears already. I figure we put it here and let people, the only thing I can't decide is, are people going to have the nerve to give something like that to a doctor?
Oh, I did.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think maybe yes. And I think a lot of doctors listen to this too. So hopefully that'll be a way that it can happen. But yeah, I can't take it anymore either. Like, it's just frustrating for an adult or a child or a parent to like be put into a situation where they have this difficult to manage thing that could be explained to them and nobody explains it to them. and then you learn that they're not explaining it to them because they don't understand it either. Then you have these conversations with people and see how their lives unfold when they don't have that information. It's unconscionable. So, I mean, somebody's got to try to do something. And I tried for a couple of years, and I'm sure this will pop up when Jenny and I talk about it. I tried to get speaking engagements. You know, there are organizations that, you know, have the ear of the medical community. And every time they contact me, they want me to come on and they want me to come to their thing and speak. But they want me to be like, you know, the famous guy from the podcast, like give some lighthearted, like they just want to draw people in. And I want to say something and I tell them, here's what I'd like to talk about. And they go, we can't have you out to talk about that over and over again.
The AMA would lose their minds.
Well, you're not a doctor and you're not going to come here and tell everybody they're doing it wrong, is what I was told once. One time, a more reasonable person said, I wish I could have you come do that. I would get fired if you showed up and spoke about that. So that's when I was like, they're not going to fix this. So like, maybe I'll take a shot at it. I mean, the podcast is spread, right? It helps people with diabetes. They find each other. Maybe that'll work the same way. I don't know, but it's worth a shot. And at the very least, even if doctors ignore it, it will teach people listening what to expect. And, you know, so it'll still be really valuable for listeners. Anyway, that's my idea. It popped in my head in the shower about 6 months ago.
I think it's a great idea.
Thank you. I have all my best thoughts in the shower.
I see people jump in all the time like, hey, I ate this. And my doctor said, you know, take this many units for this many carbs and it's not working. What should I do? And the number of people who simply don't understand that this is their life, that if it's not working, fix it, you know?
Try something would be a good first step. And then the other problem is there's factions.
Oh yeah.
Different than any other life, right? But we had it the other day in the Facebook group. This woman's kids had diabetes for 3 weeks, you know? And she's like, hey, rice. What's the deal with rice? You know? And she's like, you know, how do I do this? And they're, you know, overwhelmingly in my group, like genuinely overwhelmingly. It was a very popular thread where people came in and gave all kinds of different great thoughts about how to pre-bolus or how to, you know, change to a different rice. We do that. We eat basmati rice here because it's easier to bolus for. Or how to do extended boluses, how to cook. Like people started talking about cooking things, then cooling it and reheating it so it doesn't have the same impact. Like there's tons of great information. But it only takes one person who's got a, you know, something they want to say. And they're like, don't eat it. That's what you do. Don't eat it. And I'm like, that poor lady's kid has had diabetes for 3 weeks. Even if don't eat it ends up being the right thing for her, that's where you want to start, by scaring the hell out of her and her kid. Like, you know what I mean? Like, why is then there's the older people who have type 1 diabetes. I don't eat those things. And I'm like, have you tried the Pro Tip series? It won't help. Well, it will, but okay. So, okay, you're old enough. You've decided you can't eat rice. That's fine. Then you have to kind of like moderate the conversation so that it's clear that there would be another way, just and not offend that person, which I had to do with a couple of older women that were in the group. I was like, look, you should try this. I think maybe you'd find that if you timed your insulin differently. I don't have time for that. Okay, good. At least now the people reading it can see that they might have been wrong and there might have been another way. But if that's the decision they make, by the way, Scott, I don't care. If you decide just to cut out rice, like, God bless, well, whatever. I don't really care how people eat at all. But then it's always one person, one like bro science-y, I only eat elk meat that I kill myself, you know, like that vibe. And you're killing yourself and the insulin's killing you and carbs are killing you. And I'm like, oh my God, man, calm down. Like, go live like that if you want to. But don't, what are you doing to this woman? So then I try to have a conversation with that person, knowing, by the way, when it starts, Scott, I'm going to be as thoughtful and open to this man's ideas about how to eat as I can. But I know that by the time this day ends, he's going to leave this group. But I still have the conversation because it's worth letting people watch the conversation happen. And in the end, it works. The lady says, I'm going to go try the Pro Tip series. I'll be back. I'll switch to basmati rice. I'm going to try the cooking and cooling process for, you know, I think some people do it with potatoes and stuff like that. So we got all the good information to her. And I told her, and if one day you just want to eat low carb because you can't figure all this out, then that's up to you. You should do that. But don't not understand how insulin works and just give up on the third day. You know what I mean? Like, because that's going to lead to something bad, because, you know, pizza's really good and it's going to be a problem at some point. And if that kid goes to college, man, good luck being low carb at a college, on a college campus. I don't know how the hell you're going to do that.
I can't even imagine it. I can't. I think that we push people into disordered eating habits. We being diabetics push others into disordered eating habits instead of fixing the problem of, did I pre-bolus too early, too late, too little, too much? Should I have extended bolus? What do I do? Versus, I'm just not going to eat.
Yeah. I think it's a 10% greater risk of having an eating disorder if you have type 1 diabetes. And it doesn't matter. You're going to forget the science behind it. I've talked to a lot of people with diabetes. A lot of them have eating disorders. Like, so, yeah, and it's, in my opinion, based on my experience, it's because of this. It's because they don't want their blood sugars to get high. And of course they don't want to, and they don't want to use insulin in a way that makes them low later. And of course you don't want to do that. And they have no, like we've discussed for the last hour, nobody's taught them how to do it. So they're doing it all wrong. Their blood sugars are ping-ponging all over the place. And yes, eating no carbs will put an end to that. It'll cause you to use less insulin. Less insulin will mean fewer spikes, fewer lows. 100% right. It also means you're eating steak every day or something like that, you know, or for the rest of your life. And I'm sure there are low-carb people that will hear this and go, there's plenty of good stuff. I'm sure there is. There's plenty of great stuff you can eat. That's lovely. It's also expensive. Some people can't afford it. It's also a big idea some people can't understand. And whether you're eating carnivore or keto or somewhere in between, you still need to understand how your insulin works. So let them understand the insulin. Then they can apply it to whatever eating style they want, because this is America and I'm not their mommy, and they can eat whatever they want. There are plenty of people who eat stuff that I'm like, here's how you bolus for this, that I also think I wouldn't eat that if I was you. That does not look good for you. You know, I'm not them. To act like you can make people do anything because it's what's right or what's good for them is ridiculous. Like, I don't know how long you have to be alive before you can figure that out. You know, if it was as easy as telling people the right way, first of all, that would infer that we know the right way. But if it was that easy, then the whole world would work great, because we would just tell everybody what to do and it would all be fine. Except that's not how it works. So you're going to ignore that and then let them have poor health for their whole life? Like, why? Because, you know what I mean? Because you think eating carnivore is the way to go? Like, or whatever. Like, I just don't get that whole thing. I don't understand that feeling that you can bend the world to your will. It's just because it's quote unquote right. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. But anyway, apparently it makes sense to a few people. And then I get into a thing with those people because they're just attacking and defending their position. And I try very hard to stay open-minded, to see their position, explain what I think the bigger picture is. And then eventually at the end of the day, they think I'm an asshole and then they leave. So it's, but every time it happens, Scott, I think, uh-oh, this is my day. I don't want this to be my day, but it's going to be. And then there we are. I'm sorry. I went off on a thing there. I apologize.
When I was diagnosed with celiac, I came home from the doctor and we lived in this town of like 600 people in the middle of the Allegheny Mountains. And I went to the grocery store, which, you know, a small town grocery store, you've lived in PA. I go in and I'm trying to find something to eat that's gluten-free. And I mean, I had done some research on the internet. I knew, you know, certain things. And I went and I'm like, well, I'm getting ice cream because I deserve ice cream. And I pick it up and they look at the label and one of the ingredients is whey. And I had it stuck. It stuck in my head that I couldn't have whey, that whey was a wheat product. I don't know what made that connection, but it did. Mm-hmm. Threw the ice cream back in. I grabbed a bag of Fritos and went home, and I'm sitting on the couch pouting, and my wife comes in. She goes, what's the matter? And I go, I can't have ice cream. It has whey. And my whole family to this day mocks me for that.
I can see you eating the Fritos. Like, I don't want these Fritos.
Exactly what it was.
Stupid Fritos. Stupid.
I think that happens to a lot of people, is they get something that's factually wrong. Mm-hmm. In their head, and they run with it. It's like, instead of stopping to look at the flag they're carrying and to see if it's right, they just take it as a standard barrier and run down the field.
Yeah. Oh, I want to be completely clear. A lower or low carb diet will make type 1 diabetes management easier. It will 100%. Eating cleaner foods will. Staying away from processed foods will. More complex carbs are going to be more difficult. Like, I'm not telling you that, but it's not impossible. It's just a thing you need to understand. You deserve the opportunity to understand it before you make a decision about a thing you're never going to eat again for the rest of your life. And that's my take on it, is that everybody should understand how to use insulin and then take that knowledge out into the world and do whatever you want with it. I don't care. Like, but you should have a basic education before you start making lifelong decisions. That's all. And I think that for some reason, the way people eat becomes very tribal and they very much defend it. I've talked about it before. I understand if you're, you know, a person who has diabetes, who struggled and went low carb and it feels like it saved your life. Like, I understand that completely. And I would probably proselytize about it too, if I had that feeling. But I'm going to tell you that if you would have met me before that and tried those pro tip episodes, you might not have to have done that. And you still could have, but it might not have been your only decision at the time. So that's all. That's all I'm saying. But trust me, that gets bent all the time. Like, I see online, like, he's a carb pusher. I'm like, oh my God, I'm a carb pusher. I don't give a crap what people eat. As a matter of fact, I don't think you should have that many carbs. It's, you know, a reasonable amount is fine. But you find yourself in a day where you're having 300 carbs, 500 carbs. I don't know. I wouldn't do that if I was you, but I'm not you. So I don't care what you do. I don't know why more people. What's that?
Somebody posted their loop graph the other day asking a question about something, and they had 135 carbs on board. And I went, I have not eaten 135 carbs in a day in 10 years.
Oh, there are days where Arden's just like, I'm stunned by how much insulin she like needs for sometimes. Like, it's usually around her period, that kind of stuff, when she gets, I think, cravings for things. Arden could have like three meals a day and each meal could be 50 or 60 carbs. And wow. Yeah. And then
but that's not that much. I mean, my wife goes to Starbucks and comes back with a drink that I think is probably 150 carbs.
Yeah.
Oh, not all the time, but
that's a great example. Like, Scott, ask me if I think your wife should drink that. I do not believe she should. No, I think that's probably a mistake for her overall general health. But if she's going to, and she has diabetes, I'd like her to be able to do it without a 350 blood sugar that lasts for 2 hours and ends up with a low.
I tell people this all the time. I eat low-ish carb. Like, if we go out to, I was out with some friends a couple weeks ago and I got a burger with no bun because celiac and French fries, and they were making fun of my halfway keto, halfway not keto dinner. But I don't eat carbs in the morning, very rarely, because I get up, I get moving, I get a few hours of work done, and then I go run. And I know if I have more than a half unit of insulin on board when I go to run, I'm going to have to do drastic things. Like, I'm going to have to like eat 20 or 30 grams of carbs so I don't crash, because I go from about 10 to 1 or 10 carbs per unit to about 100 carbs per unit.
When you're exercising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny. I ran almost 34 miles on Saturday at that race. My G7 freaked out in the middle of it. And I was running this perfectly flat line 80 number for like an hour and a half. And all of a sudden it beeps and says, hey, you're 220. And I'm like, no, I'm not 220. I know this. I fooled around with it, tried correcting it a couple times. It didn't work. I replaced it, which the warm up on the new sensors is everything to me.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So I had eaten a whole lot of carbs to correct the insulin that was given to me when it thought I was 200, but wasn't. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, after 10 hours, I had used less than 4 units of insulin total.
To run that whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I ate a lot of bananas.
The way the variables impact is fascinating. I mean, obviously that's a lot of running, but Arden's been doing a couple of all-nighters in a row. And like clockwork, she's getting low at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And it's from her sleep being off.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That'll kill me.
Yeah. And so it's fascinating. And then of course you're exhausted and your sleep's off and you're low. So like last night I had to wake her up. I had a hard time waking her up last night. And like, I was sending like find my iPhones. Like, I left my bedroom so I wouldn't wake my wife up, 'cause I was like calling. And I got to the point where I was looking at her blood sugar and I'm like, I'm gonna have to call her roommates. And I'm like, she's gonna be pissed about that. But I tried not to, and I as long as I could, but with Night Scout, I could see she still had enough insulin on board. This was going to be problematic. She wasn't going to float at 60, and she didn't. She went down to 50, and then it was like 48. I'm like, okay, like, that's it. Like, here we go. And I woke everybody up, and she sent me an angry text. You know, don't bother my roommates. And I just sent her a text back. I said, Arden, I waited as absolutely long as I could. This was necessary. You know, you need to drink a juice, and that's it. And actually, remotely, I changed her target from where it is to like 110 for the rest of the night so it wouldn't happen again. I know people are like, how do you do that? I did it with Night Scout. She's using IAPS. I don't have time to explain it all to you right now. Actually, I don't have time, Scott, because I have to go to a lunch thing soon. But I did all that, and she woke up this morning, and I got a text from her at like 10 o'clock. She should have been in class. She goes, Dad, I slept through my class. I'm so sorry. Like, you know, I'm going to have to do a couple of things because I'm behind and I'm exhausted and I need to catch up. And I just told her, like, we didn't even talk about last night. Like, she's not mad about last night. She wasn't mad then. Her blood sugar was low. It was 4 o'clock in the morning and she was frustrated. And I just told her one of those things that, like, you know, I've learned, like, through being old. I just told her, I said, like, just remember, be flexible. I was like, rearrange your to-do list so that it reflects what's, you know, most important now. Don't look backwards. Don't worry about anything that you feel like you're putting off. I said, you're a smart person. You'll do the right thing. Just keep going. That's it. And I hopefully that's what she'll end up doing. But yeah, she tried to burn the candle at both ends for a couple of days, and it made everything hard for her. So yeah, anyway, those variables like running or not getting enough sleep or whatever, they're tough on you. Scott, I apologize for doing this, but I got to ask you if there's anything else that we missed, because I have to go in a minute.
Oh, no problem. No, I had a great time. Thank you.
Oh, me too. We're definitely calling this Two Old Scots. I think
I'm down with that.
Yeah, it is a perfect name. Although I imagine you're like, you know, in amazing shape, and I'm just still trying to get there. And I'm using medication. It sounds like you're running to do it, but good for you.
It's therapy.
Well, you know, I didn't want to say, because you seem like such a nice person, but I believe anybody that runs this much is exercising their thoughts.
Oh, my shrink will would agree with you all day long.
Yeah, that's all. It's fine with me. I don't know however your thing comes out. Listen, if your thing comes out with extra healthy, fantastic. You know,
can I tell one quick story,
please,
before you go to
lunch? Please, please, please.
So I was at the grocery store yesterday. I had like three or four errands to run, but I'm like trying to do it between meetings and stuff. And I go running into the grocery store and I'm grabbing the things. And for whatever reason, my blood sugar goes from 116 to 50 in the 10 minutes I'm in the grocery store. I've had tunneling issues. That's probably what it is. But I get up to the counter and I'm standing there and I'm like, I because my blood sugar was so low, I had forgotten everything that I needed. I'm standing there with 2 6-packs of Diet Pepsi. I can't operate the machine. I can't do anything. So I grabbed a package of gummy lifesavers, and I'm not talking a small package. I'm talking like, you know,
the big roll by the cigar. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm shoving them into my mouth while waiting in line at the check out. And the woman comes over. She goes, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Why?" She goes, "You're sweating really bad." I'm like, "I'll be fine in a minute." I couldn't. She had to ring me out at the self checkout. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's crazy. How quick did it come over you? 10 minutes?
Oh yeah, if even. I mean, I literally walked in the store and was suddenly confused.
And that's you wearing a fairly adept algorithm that is taking away insulin, trying to stop that from happening to you. And it still can happen. After I managed Arden last night, got her awake and got her to do everything, I looked back at how long that algorithm had been trying to stop this low from happening. It had been trying for like 4 hours to avoid this moment. You just stop and think, if that's not an algorithm, then for the last 4 hours, she's getting a unit of insulin an hour as her basal on like a standard pumping system. And she would have needed, I mean, instead of like a small little quick 15 gram juice box that took a 50 and turned it into a 95 for the rest of the night. I mean, 4 units, 14. I mean, she would have needed like 40 carbs to fix that, maybe more, and something more substantial than juice. So anyway, this stuff's amazing. We're lucky to have it. I got to jump off, Scott. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Of course. Hold on 1 second for me. A huge thanks to US Med for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box Podcast. Don't forget, usmed.com/juicebox. This is where we get our diabetes supplies from. You can as well. Use the link or call 888-721-1514. Use the link or call the number, get your free benefits check so that you can start getting your diabetes supplies the way we do from US Med. A huge thank you to one of today's sponsors, AG1. Drinkag1.com/juicebox. You can start your day the same way I do, with a delicious drink of AG1. Thanks also to Gvoke Glucagon. Find out more about Gvoke HypoPen at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. You spell that GVOKEGLUCAGON.com/juicebox. If you're not already subscribed or following in your favorite audio app, please take the time now to do that. It really helps the show. And get those automatic downloads set up so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back very soon with another episode of the Juice Box Podcast. The Juice Box Podcast is full of so many series that you want and need. After Dark, Ask Scott and Jenny, Algorithm Pumping, Bold Beginnings, Defining Diabetes, Defining Thyroid, the Diabetes Pro Tip Series for Type 1, the Diabetes Variable Series, Mental Wellness, Type 2 Diabetes Pro Tip, How We Eat. Oh my goodness, there's so much at juiceboxpodcast.com. Head up into that menu and pick around. And if you're in the private Facebook group, just go to the feature tab for lists upon lists of all of the series. Always free, always helpful. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording. Wrongwayrecording.com.